Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how have you been?
Drying out.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely some massive precipitation followed by, you know, we had the road issues going on in Franklin County. And man, it's been tough this year. We thought we were out of the snow, but I will tell you, I did sneak away to Phoenix for a couple days early part of the week and last week. And you know, they caught the tail end of that L.A. California storm, and I thought we were wet here, but I experienced about 2.5 inches in 2 days. And, you know, I thought I was going to come home and dry out, and I didn't. So it's definitely been a little crazy. But I tell you what, and like I've told a bunch of people, I'm going to take this rain over what we had last month. So
yeah.
So we're here making it happen. In the studio with us, we have our in-house lending specialist, Mr. Mike Denslow with Home Street. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. I was kind of thinking the same thing as you. I snuck away to Arizona a couple of weeks ago, and I got some sun, which was nice. And I just think that this is going to make spring that much sweeter.
Yeah, I think we're all going to remember this for a while. I will tell you, I did get one sunny day down there, and it was nice to remind myself what 60 felt like on a sunny day. However, I would walk outside, and I would still flinch, you know, because I'm still expecting it to be cold. That I'd relax a little bit and be like, oh, this is fantastic. So
yeah. I don't need a jacket today.
Well, it was definitely kind of cool down there. We did get some house research in. It's kind of a job hazard. I can't but help. We might travel a little bit for kids' athletics, but we always hit some model homes and look at some prices and what's going on down there. And they have a little more inventory than we do. And we got some great ideas on how we can do some things better here, too. So snuck in a little bit of work. And glad to be back. And things are getting busy. Before we jump into our topic, we're going to talk a little bit about a buyer issue today on the show. But before we do, we always like to get into our crazy celebrity real estate house story. And I don't think I've ever had him on the show as a featured. I don't see much of his stuff come up for sale. But Warren Buffett has actually listed his longtime Laguna Beach home. And it's on the market, Laguna Beach. If you've ever looked at prices, we've talked about it a couple times on the show. Probably one of the most expensive beach real estate markets in the U.S. And his it's about 3,800 square foot beach home. And this is not even directly on the beach, but just near in this community. That is listed for $11 million. Now, the cool part about the story that I absolutely loved was that it was purchased by Mr. Buffett in 1971. He's had it that long, crazy, for $150,000. I mean, is that not...
Hey, the guy is known for good investments.
I mean, I can't even... I mean, granted, we're talking... I mean, you can't even find it. It's tough to find a good condition starter home right now here in Tri-Cities for $150,000. But yeah, purchased in 71, which was a lot of money back then. But Laguna Beach, I mean, for $150,000, most people are spending more on cars in Laguna Beach than that. So really cool to kind of look at that. At the time, it wasn't fully developed, but obviously over the last 40 years, every inch of that place has been developed. Real estate is prime. Hilarious, though, reading in this article that came out of Realtor.com, is they spent a lot of summers and Christmases there. But now the 86-year-old was asked if he'll look for another vacation home in the article. And I had to laugh and got a kick out of it. And he said, probably not. If you want to know where I want to vacation, it's at the office. I thought that was that's definitely fitting for Warren Buffett. So, yeah, $150,000 piece of real estate, home, from that to $11 million. So I'm hoping that I could buy something, Mike, for $150,000 that when I'm 86 is worth $11 million.
Yeah, 45 years. That's a lot of appreciation.
So I thought that was a good one. That was one of my favorite celebrity stories we've done in a while. So I was doing some reading as I was on my trip and as I was coming back and looking for ideas for this week's radio show. And like I said, I felt like I focused on sellers the last couple weeks and wanted to kind of go to that opposite spectrum, talk about buyers looking for homes. And one of the things that happens sometimes with buyers and as buyers are looking at home, I read this article that was written by Brendan DeSimone. He's kind of a nationally recognized real estate expert, has written a couple books, Next Generation of Real Estate, New Rules for Smarter Home Buying. So smart guy. I've read his stuff and recently did an article that I thought, you know, this is a fantastic take on things. And that is, what happens when the seller of a house is just not that into you? In fact, you're writing an offer, a seller selling a house, you're writing an offer, and you just get the impression that the seller doesn't even like you. And it's crazy, but as I read the article, it really hit a chord with me because this happens with buyers all the time. They will, from their perspective, write an offer. And part of that is where an agent really comes into play and who you're working with can make a big difference. Because a lot of times a buyer will write an offer from their perspective, it'll be a good offer. They'll feel good about it. They'll think that they're offering the right amount. They'll think that their terms are appropriate for the property. And they will get, in the worst scenarios, no response. The seller won't even counter or will call back and the other agent will say, the seller is not considering your offer. And this is hard for buyers. Sometimes they're shocked by this. Sometimes they're downright pissed off, angry about the response, and other times bewildered. You know, completely wondering what the heck happened. So the first thing I wrote down, and so I took a couple things from this article, and then I kind of added my experience onto it. And the first thing that I wrote down that actually wasn't in this article was, have your real estate agent that you're working with as a buyer, before you write that offer, have them see if they can find out what I call them trigger points are for the seller. What are some hot button items that the seller may need, or what are they looking for? Because sometimes you'll find out, like people, I think a lot of times make the assumption that it's always about price. But in some cases, it's not. I've seen a lot of sellers, maybe even in the new construction market, or maybe a seller is downsizing. They've had a big home that they've been, you know, raised their family in for 25 years, and they're doing that new construction build. And I've seen sometimes those sellers, they have a lot of equity. They've started building their new home. They don't have to sell the one they're in. And a lot of times I've seen those sellers be in a position where convenience of move date meant more than them than maximizing price. Like they might take $10,000 less for an offer, but if they got to have a closing date that was 7 days after their new construction home is done, that's a big deal to them because now they're not moving twice. And it's hard to put a number on what the inconvenience of moving twice is. We can put a financial number on it, hotels, apartment rent, short-term leases, but there's a number out there that is abstract, and it's what I call the convenience factor for the seller. So have your agent try to determine what those trigger points are. Also comes down to, Do they need a few extra days in the house? Do they need the money from the sale of their house to close on the next property that they're purchasing? And to do that, sometimes it's very difficult to have a simultaneous close. So to do that, do we need to close on that purchase as the buyer and then give the seller, say, a 7-day rent back of the house so that they can get their money, they can get it escrowed, and then they can close on their property? So there's a lot of these situations that if you're just blindly looking at a listing on Zillow or on a website and you say, I'm ready to make an offer on that house, and you're just blindly going into that and looking at just the purchase price, and maybe even you're willing to pay full price. Maybe you write a full price offer or 1% to 2% low, and you come back and you're shocked because you think it should just be immediately accepted. But there's all these other factors going on in the background that you don't know.
Lance, you're hitting on a lot of good things. The main thing is most of the time clients, buyers think it's all about money.
Right.
And sometimes it's just not.
Yeah. And that's in our world of advertising and price points and stuff. Yeah. It's really, there's a lot of factors going on in the background. The other thing that that we had written down here was sometimes you go back and you counter offer once or twice and you feel like you're just too far apart as a buyer and you've exhausted your negotiation points. There's always that point of if that is the perfect house for you, that's the house you want. As kind of that last ditch effort, they call it highest and best. There's nothing against, even if a seller is frustrated or doesn't seem like they're into you, there's nothing that says at X amount of dollars, this is the perfect house for my family, that has kind of that final last-ditch effort. You can go to that seller, you can have your agent prepare highest and best, and you can go to that seller and give them your highest and best. And a lot of times you'll feel good about that. You know you went to your max. You communicate that properly to the seller. Sometimes that's all you're pre-approved to. And that's all you can do. And if you can include a letter from your lender indicating that, you can then explain to the seller's agent and the seller, we as a good faith gesture, we have gone to our maximum amount. This is what we can do. We don't want to offend anybody, but here's where we're at. And so even if you've gone through multiple rounds of negotiation, as you leave that, I always tell the other parties, I don't like the ball to die in my court. So if this is the maximum amount we can do, or there's another term we can adjust, even if it's not financial, even if it's occupancy or maybe negotiated items, I say go ahead and go for that. And that way, you know, you've left that situation as a buyer, you can feel good that you gave it your best effort. So, and I know, Mike, sometimes as a negotiating standpoint, having that maximum approved amount can come in handy.
Yeah, absolutely. Normally on a pre-approval letter, we're going to put in the amount of the offer.
Right.
Right. And if they want to increase it, or the listing agent wants to see an increased pre-approval to a newer number that's $5,000 or $10,000 more, we'll absolutely update that offer and put that in. Sometimes the client wants us to show it at $10,000 higher than the offer. I mean, as long as they're pre-approved to that number, we have no problem doing that.
Yeah, and that's a good point you bring up. A lot of times in past markets, and I bet that's a really smart buyer and a smart agent doing what you just said, because in past markets, a lot of times buyers felt like providing a pre-approval letter above their offer price was kind of showing their cards or their hand that they could go higher. But in a market like we've had, where we're dealing with multiple offers, or there could be a counter offer above list price, going in strong with a pre-approval letter $10,000 above what you're asking can indicate the strength of the buyer. So as an agent and a seller's agent, if you're just looking at those offers, you can say, gosh, this person is stretching at their max. This other person still has $10,000 in their ratios and they're approved for more than what they're purchasing. A lot of times that can convey strength to a seller. So good point you brought up there. We're going to talk about some more great items when we come back, and that is how buyers can learn from a failed offer, and then some tricks and tips of ways they can incentivize their offer with a seller that does not like them.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. Super excited this week. Did some extra reading, had done some research, and I was a little bit hesitant to do this topic on the radio show, but when I said it came up and I said, gosh, what does the buyer do when the seller doesn't like them? And then I thought about it more often than not, and I said, you know what, this is one of the reasons why having a real estate agent is such a big help. And so it actually made me smile a little bit because I thought, you know what? If all sellers liked buyers, I might be out of business, Mike. So sometimes what we're doing more often than not is refereeing a little bit because a buyer wants to get a property for the most favorable terms for the buyer. A seller wants the most favorable terms for the seller. And so naturally they become adversaries. And then the more I dug into this and looked at it as a show topic, I'm like, you know what? This happens all the time. Sellers don't like buyers at all. And when they're getting their offers, they don't like their offers. And so it really kind of said, what are some of the things you can do as a buyer when you know the seller doesn't like you? They don't like your offer. How can we kind of get our chances for helping to get that offer accepted and come up with some terms that work for the seller? So, and then when I was talking about having Mike and Home Street on the show, one of the things that helps a lot is as a buyer is that you've got a pre-approval letter from somebody like Home Street that's local. So the seller's going to like that. One of the things to get on their good graces is to show them that you have the money. And one of the things you can do with your offers that is unique, we don't see it very often, but you can submit your offer with what I call an evidence of funds addendum. And then the really aggressive buyers are also submitting their offer with an evidence of funds addendum, which says, I have the down payment to close. I'm not just telling you I do. I have the down payment to close. I have the funds necessary to close. And oh, by the way, here's a copy of my bank statement showing that the funds are liquid and ready to go. So as a seller, you might not like that buyer at all, but you sure like that buyer's cash. And so I'm going to turn it over to Mike here because then you've got the evidence of funds. And you've got a pre-approval letter now. So from the buyer's standpoint, Mike, as you look at that, what happens once they have that pre-approval?
Well, when I get them in, they always ask, you know, what can I get pre-approved to? And I always ask them, well, what do you want? Because I'm not going to be maxing anybody out. If you want to buy a house for $250,000, I'm not going to come back and say, oh, well, you're pre-approved to $300,000 or $350,000. It just doesn't make any sense to do that. So, okay, $250,000. Well, really, you're not pre-approved to a price. You're pre-approved to a monthly payment because what we're doing is we're running credit and we're looking at your income and we're looking to see how much of a payment can fit into your debt-to-income ratio. And so I get a lot of people that say, well, I don't want to go over a $1,200 payment. Well, that's going to be very different if you're looking at an FHA loan or a VA loan or a 20% down conventional loan. And so we play the game of, all right, look at every $5,000 around this price range. And then you have every different house has got different property taxes, right? So you might find a house that's lower assessed, that has lower taxes, and so that payment might be a little bit less than you expected, or maybe it's even the opposite way, a little bit more. So what I offer to people is, all right, we get you pre-approved, and you're out there looking. When you find the house, and you're like, I want to put an offer in on this house, I asked them to call me, give me the address of that house, give me the price they're thinking about offering, and then I'll give them an estimated payment, knowing the taxes, knowing what the rate is that day, knowing how much they want to put down. And so there really isn't much of a question on how that payment's going to fit into their budget. And they can think about it and they're like, yeah, okay, good. I'm good with that number. And they can come back to you and say, well, how strong does this offer need to be, Lance?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love the fact that you're working into it when you can, the actual taxes and the estimate for the insurance. Because sometimes people have a little bit of shock. They'll see a principal and interest payment. Maybe they've gone online and they've just plugged it into an online calculator. And many, many times that online calculator doesn't have taxes and insurance. So they get spit out a number and they're like, oh my gosh, Lance, my payment is only $790 on that house. And I'm scratching my head and I'm like, let's read the fine print here. And we'll take a look at that and then come to find out. I love what you said, how you've included taxes and insurance on that to make sure it's an approvable amount.
Well, absolutely. Even if you're putting 20% down, you don't have to have that in your payment. You can elect to not have that in your payment. But when we do the debt-to-income qualification, it's in there because you're going to be paying it even if you don't have it in your payment.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a smart, smart way to look at it. And then once again, I always like to come back to the fact people can get a hold of you. They can talk to you about these scenarios and they can go through some of the different things you're thinking about. And I know you'll even look at that from a perspective of area. Like when they call, like you actually know the neighborhoods in the Tri-Cities.
Right. Especially with new construction, there is going to be a different property tax estimate range. It's called the millage rate. And then we work out that number when we estimate what we think those property taxes are going to be for that specific neighborhood.
Right. Because I've seen the mistake before where lenders will be like, oh, yeah. So they'll pull the taxes from when it was just land. And it's, it was only on a $50,000 lot, not a $400,000 house. And man, that makes a huge difference.
It can swing a payment. Yeah. $250, $300+.
Good, good information, Mike. Mike, I want to thank you and Home Street for being on top of that type of stuff, being here to answer questions. I love the fact, too, I know on top of just lending, you and I are always working together. I know you had some of our staff in your office this week and talking and meeting with you about how things work there. And those type of meetings and communication just make it so much easier for our clients to get kind of a seamless transition.
That's always the plan. We want happy people at the end.
So one of the things we are talking about, too, is what happens when you don't get an offer accepted. As a buyer, you run into a situation where you didn't get an offer accepted or the seller didn't respond with what you thought they would respond to. I always wrote down too is you have to take an opportunity to learn from that experience. What mistakes could have been avoided? How long did the negotiations drag out? So here's one of those things where an agent is considering the client that you're dealing with on the other side. Maybe it's a generational thing. I run into this all the time to where I'll have, say I'll have a client that came in through a website. Generally, they might be a millennial. They might be 30 or under. They saw a home on Zillow. They contacted us. We called them back within 3 minutes. We showed them the house within an hour and a half. They submitted an offer that afternoon. Well, somebody that has grown up in the technology industry, that has grown up being able to immediately get results and stuff from online and texting, we may put that offer in at 5:30 in the afternoon, and I guarantee you that same client is texting me at 7:30, 2 hours later, asking what the seller's response is. And so let's talk about this. Maybe there's a generation. Maybe they're, we don't know how old the seller is. but maybe they don't do texting. And maybe their agent and them have to meet in person the next day because that's how they're used to doing business. I'm not judging saying one way is better than another. And so a lot of times we'll have a buyer like that and we'll say, geez, you know, the seller has requested to come into the office tomorrow at noon, review everything with their agent, and then they're going to be getting back to us. And the buyer's just like, they're flabbergasted. They can't believe it, Mike. They can't believe that they're not getting a response that evening. And so one of the things that happens is that buyer can maybe become disenfranchised with the process. They didn't like how quickly the seller got back to them. The seller, and I tell you what, God forbid the seller wait an entire day to get back to a buyer like that. That buyer could have gone and already made an offer on another house. So one of the things we're counseling our clients on both ends of that spectrum, buyer and seller, is there's going to be a little dance here that happens, and we need to consider these other factors on what is normal for that buyer and what is normal for that seller. And working with the agent on the other side, talking to the other agent about those factors, negotiating with the agent also is a great way to help buffer some of those things that come up. So if you're frustrated after waiting for 2 or 3 hours and this happens 2 or 3 times, you need to look at that process, talk to your agent, talk to your advisor and say, maybe it's me that could be the problem here. Maybe,
no way it's you.
Maybe I'm not waiting long enough for those responses. Now, on the same time, a lot of times we're counseling our sellers. We'll get an offer and a seller will say, gosh, I'm going to take 2 days to think about this and try to figure this out. Well, we might be counseling that same seller. Okay, look, here's the situation. We just got an offer. We got it via email. The buyer signed digitally on DocuSign. They submitted their bank. You know, we can start to maybe profile that buyer and say to our seller, hey, I know you need to take some time to think through this, but if this is a buyer you want, we might need to consider coming up with a plan sooner rather than later and maybe cutting that time frame in half. So those are other situations that we're always looking at. The other thing that I had written down in that situation is we talked a little bit about finding some hot buttons or trigger points for a seller that even if they don't like you, maybe there's something you can provide them that nobody else could. If you're in multiple offers, and one of the scenarios that I had that I came back to is I had a client once, they were a buyer and they owned a lawn care business. And so, and I know as lenders, Mike, you're not going to like this, but it was all disclosed and it was on the front of the offer. And actually, the buyer of the property had agreed to cut the seller's lawn at the new house the seller was buying for 2 years. So weekly grass maintenance of their new house. Trust me, no other offers came in like that. And so the seller was looking at this deal and the seller's like, well, these offers are kind of competitive, but geez, this guy's willing to do my grass for 2 years at the new house I'm moving to. It was a convenience factor for them and they went for that offer. And so I know there's a whole disclosure issue and appraisal issue and Mike's over here like telling me we should not be airing this story. We worked through it and with proper disclosure to the lenders, we were able to get it done. So it was crazy. But there's things like that you consider. What can you do to kind of maybe win that seller over? And then the last thing that I had down here on top of learning from that experience was don't take too much time trying to figure out what happened to the seller. There's a million scenarios that a lot of times we don't know about. And another example I'd come up with was a lot of times I've seen people where maybe it's an executor of an estate and there's brothers and sisters fighting. And I've seen offers that were $150,000 and they had conventional financing. It was only going to take 30 days. And then at the same time as multiple offers, and there was an offer for $140,000 that was closed in 7 days cash, $10,000 less. And that executive was so tired of fighting with brothers and sisters that they just took the $140,000 closed in 7 days to get it done. And that's hard because that's never – stuff like that is never going to be disclosed. And so as a buyer, it's tough. You're like, gosh, why didn't my offer for $150 get accepted? And then you might even 7 days later see the county assessed closed value at $140. And then as a buyer, you're sitting there really asking yourself, why didn't I get the house? So there's a million different scenarios with sellers of what might be happening, why they might not like your offer. Have your agents do some due diligence, figure out as much as they can what's going on. And if you don't get it, try to learn from that experience and move on to the next property. A lot of times at closing with happy customers, they'll say, gosh, Lance, I'm actually, you know, we found another great house. I'm actually glad we didn't get that first one. So those are some of those tips, kind of an unconventional subject this week, but brought a lot of basics to the forefront that we're dealing with all the time with buyers and sellers in today's market. Mike, you brought up some good points about pre-approval and financing. How can people get to you at Home Street?
And the phone number is 572-3651 or mike.denslow@homestreet.com.
As always, too, if you're driving and can't remember, go to kenmoreteam.com. Shoot us a message. We'll make sure we get you over to Mike or the proper person you need on our team. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening, and we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.